Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, Donald Trump's cognitive decline has now taken center stage in the 2024 election to the point where even conservatives are starting to voice their concerns about his declining mental state. Lauren Boebert hoped that moving to the 4th Congressional District of Colorado would be a slam dunk for her, but according to a recent straw poll, she is actually in 5th place in a 9-way race, and things are looking like they're probably going to get even worse. The conservative news outlet One America News is in hot water after allegedly giving Sidney Powell a spreadsheet that contained user data, login data, for Smartmatic machines. That could come back to bite them. And of course, Donald Trump is encouraging Republicans to kill any kind of border deal, because if they work out a deal with President Biden, they're not going to be able to campaign on immigration, because maybe we'll actually solve the problem. We have all that and much more coming up on this week's show. And don't forget, you can get the full show every week by signing up and becoming a member at rofpodcast.com. And you can get Ring of Fire every day of the week by subscribing to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Lauren Boebert's decision to switch districts from Colorado's 3rd District to the 4th District so she could have a better chance in a more conservative district with an open seat doesn't seem to be working out very well for her at all so far, especially considering the fact that last Thursday, they actually had their first Republican primary debate. There were 9 Republicans up on that stage, and it didn't go well for Boebert when her opponents accused her of being a carpetbagger, then basically told her that she probably can't even define the word carpetbagger. And then a straw poll taken after the debate shows that Lauren Boebert, out of 9 people, came in 5th place. Now, the straw poll was of 100 people. So I'm not putting a ton of stock into this straw poll of 100 people who sat there and watched the debate and Boebert came in 5th. But what I am going to do is I'm going to add that to everything else that has already happened to Lauren Boebert since she switched districts. For example, the debate itself. She repeatedly was accused of being a carpetbagger. Her many scandals were brought up. Her arrests were brought up. Although, to be fair, they did ask, the moderators asked how many people on stage had been arrested. And 2/3 of them, 6 out of 9, raised their hands. So we're dealing with not the best from Colorado, apparently. But Boebert then proceeded to lie about only being arrested 1 time when records actually show she has been arrested at least 3 times. Now, add that and the straw poll onto the fact that interviews with people in her new district, in that 4th district, have already shown that they don't want her. Voters, Republican voters in that district have said, we do not like her. We do not approve of her. We're disgusted by her actions, they have said. So things are not going well for her at all. In fact, the only thing she actually has working in her favor at the moment is the fact that there are currently 9 other Republicans running for that seat in the primary. The primary is not until March 5th, so we get a little bit over a month now, but Boebert in 5th place, based on this one straw poll, wouldn't even make it to a runoff in that district. So here's what that means. On March 5th, the day of that primary, once all those results come rolling in, Boebert may be a lame duck at that point. If she does not make it past the primary, her congressional career, at least at the moment, is done. She will finish out the rest of this term, and then what? I mean, she said she's moving to the 4th district for a new start. Wonderful. Great. Your ex-husband seems like a real piece of work based on his arrest records and his overall history. So a fresh start would be great. But what are you going to do? In fact, that's actually what one of her opponents pointed out. This was a week or so before the debate. He's like, she doesn't have a job. Her restaurant got shut down. Like, she doesn't really have any training to do anything. She's got nothing else. She moved here to keep her job. So what is she going to do? Like, that's the big question I have. I mean, is she going to try to open up another restaurant? Is she probably not going to get a job in conservative media? I mean, she's not exactly the best person on camera. Maybe, as one of our viewers actually pointed out to me one time, maybe she could become one of those evangelical pastors. She'd probably make a ton of money doing that. She seems to actually perform well up on stage at churches. But other than that, I don't know what she's going to do. But come the evening of March 5th, she better have a backup plan in place, because it's not looking like she's going to make it past that primary. So last Friday, in a post at 2 a.m. on Truth Social, Donald Trump actually encouraged what many are considering to be a rebellion by red states against the federal government of the United States. And he did so by telling all of these red states, and I think at this point there's like 24 of them, so about half the country, he encouraged them to send their National Guard down to the state of Texas to prevent Texas from having to let the feds come in to snip the razor wire that the Supreme Court earlier last week had ruled had to come down. So Trump openly said, use your state militaries to fight back against the federal government. Because, in Trump's words, Biden's not doing anything about the immigration problem. And at the same time that Trump is telling states to use their military to fight back against the federal government, he has also been encouraging Republicans in Congress to not vote on a border deal to help secure our southern border. Republicans in the House and Senate are now actively working against any kind of border security because, as Trump told audiences this weekend, doing so would help President Biden. Now, the immigration problem, if you want to call it that, has become the number one issue on voters' minds this year. And it's become the number one issue because the media hammers it and makes everybody think that we're being invaded. We're not being invaded. It's idiotic to use those words. But voters buy into it. The media has done a poor job of framing the issue. It is what it is. And Trump is campaigning on it, just like he did in 2016. But in order to successfully campaign on it, just like these other Republicans, he has to make sure there's no solution to it. See, Biden came out Monday, and he actually said, if we pass this border deal, I'll shut the border down today. I'll sign the legislation and shut the border down. Which, by the way, is what Donald Trump is promising to do if he gets back into the White House. But if Biden does it before him, if Biden stops this so-called problem, then what does Trump have? What's he going to campaign on? What are all these other Republicans in Congress going to campaign on? The answer is nothing. So Trump is telling these people that you can't solve the problem. You have to keep the problem. You have to let it continue to exist, or else I'm finished because Biden gets a big victory on the number one issue to voters. Do y'all realize for a second how sick that is? Like, why is this not the top story on every single media outlet in this country? Trump is telling them, use your governments to fight back against the federal government because they're not doing anything on immigration. And the government's over here like, actually, we're trying to do something on immigration, but you're telling people behind the scenes to not let us do it. This is madness. This is absolute, utter madness. All 100% being orchestrated by Donald Trump, because he is pulling the strings on his little puppets that he's got in the House and Senate. Even Mitch McConnell is confused about what to do. He doesn't want to not have a deal. He doesn't care. But his hands are now tied. In fact, Republican Senator James Lankford, who actually supports the immigration deal in the Senate, his state of Oklahoma has now voted to censure him for supporting the legislation. My God, like, folks, this is the craziest thing that I have seen in many years in American politics. Republicans are telling us we have a problem. Congress says, well, we have a solution. Biden says we have a solution. Then those same Republicans tell, no, we can't have that solution because then we have nothing to campaign on. And if the Democrats do not get out there and make this the message, then they're going to lose this year because Republicans have already captured this narrative. And most of the public does not understand that Republicans are the ones keeping the border in a state of so-called crisis because they think it helps them politically. Well, folks, we've got more problems for One America News Network and former Donald Trump lawyer Sidney Powell. It's been revealed in court filings that CNN has obtained that One America News Network, allegedly, according to the court filings, sent Sidney Powell an email. The president of One America News sent Sidney Powell an email on January 8th, 2021, 2 days after the Capitol riot. And this email contained an attachment that was a spreadsheet of usernames and passwords for Smartmatic employees so that Sidney Powell could use it to get into the Smartmatic system. Now, the court filing from Smartmatic, because this is part of their defamation lawsuit against One America News and Sidney Powell, by the way, they allege that this is, you know, appearing to have violated state and federal laws regarding data privacy. The filing does not explain, likely because Smartmatic does not know, how One America got their hands on those passwords. But it also does not authenticate the passwords. So we don't know if these are the real passwords. We do not know, as of this moment, if Sidney Powell used any of them or attempted to use any of them. But here's the thing, whether or not those passwords were active and correct wouldn't necessarily matter in terms of violating federal law. If you get your hands on somebody's password, you put it in a database, a spreadsheet, and you're going to send it to somebody else, but in that meantime, the individual changes their password, that doesn't change the fact that their privacy was violated. And it doesn't change the fact that that would, in fact, run afoul of state and or federal laws. So if One America, the conservative news outlet, did, in fact, have a spreadsheet that had either current or former passwords of these people, that would be a criminal action. So the question I have, because this is brought up in a civil matter, you know, Smartmatic can't file criminal charges against these people, is why is there not an investigation? Because this is not new information. Smartmatic has known about this. They had filed it in court. They didn't just file it. CNN only just now uncovered it. So did Smartmatic, has Smartmatic filed a criminal complaint? Have they gone to the authorities and said, oh my God, this president of this conservative media outlet got our passwords, investigate? That's what I want to know, and so far I've not been able to find any answer to that, because if Smartmatic thought this information was real, that should have been the first action. Like, don't put it in a civil complaint. Go and make the police report first, then add it to your lawsuit. I do not think that Smartmatic would be foolish enough to not do that. So hopefully this is where maybe some investigative journalist somewhere is making phone calls and trying to find out if, in fact, a criminal complaint has been filed. Because if so, this looks pretty bad for One America, and their president needs to worry about more than just that defamation lawsuit against them. Because if this report is accurate, that's the kind of thing that could probably land you in jail. Oh, and by the way, just for the record, it wasn't just Sidney Powell that they allegedly sent this to. Oh, no. They also allegedly sent it to Mike Lindell. So we'll see where this goes. This story is just developing, but I think there's a lot more here than what we're being told. This past weekend, a former Republican judge, he is retired, but he was appointed to oversee hearings in the state of Illinois about whether or not the state board of elections actually had the authority to ban Donald Trump from the state's ballots this year for engaging in an insurrection. and the judge gave his non-binding decision this past weekend. Again, non-binding is key there. And in this ruling from this former judge, again, a Republican, he said that Donald Trump did engage in an insurrection. So right off the bat, that's pretty huge. A Republican judge said Donald Trump did engage in an insurrection. But, there's always a but. The judge also said, it's for the courts to decide whether or not he can stay on the ballot, not the Illinois Board of Elections. Now, the judge also said, and again, retired judge, I guess I should say, he did say, you're free to use my decision or not use my decision. Again, this is non-binding. I have no actual authority here. You just hired me, appointed me to oversee this because I have judicial experience. I'm a respected judge and I'm giving you my opinion. Use it or don't. I don't care. But the fact that the judge said he did engage in an insurrection, that is going to carry a lot of weight with the State Board of Elections. But ultimately, the judge is right. It will be up to the court to decide, but not the court in Illinois. It'll be up to the United States Supreme Court. They are going to hear whether or not Donald Trump can be barred from state ballots using the 14th Amendment, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment specifically. But the more we have determinations like this, because it's not a ruling, it's a determination, that Donald Trump did engage in an insurrection, all of those little bits of evidence can be used if the Supreme Court says Trump can be banned from the ballots. Because if they say that, then there's no holds barred. Illinois could become one of the biggest states, so far would be the biggest state, to kick Donald Trump off the ballot. Colorado, which is a swing state, has already banned Donald Trump from the ballot, although that one, of course, is on hold pending the Supreme Court decision. And other states have already said, no, we're not going to ban him from our ballot. Now, those lawsuits that actually failed in those states, like Minnesota, could be revived if the Supreme Court says Trump can be kicked off the ballot, but we'll have to wait and see. But either way, a couple well-placed swing states, or even red states, where Donald Trump is not on the ballot, that would prevent him from being physically able to reach that number of Electoral College votes to even win the presidency. Even if those states go for not Biden, you know, they just vote for a different Republican, but that's not going to necessarily take away from Biden's ability to get that Electoral College victory. So this is an interesting dynamic. Illinois, obviously a very big state in terms of Electoral College votes. So this could be a big one, but we're not going to get any resolution to it, unfortunately, till the Supreme Court hands down their decision. And if they say that, nope, you can't bar Trump from the ballot, then none of this means anything. Go about your day and pretend you never watched it. But if they say that, yes, Trump can be barred, then Illinois is already poised to be ready to kick him off as soon as they get that green light. Trump's continued mental decline has now become front and center in the 2024 election, to the point where even Fox News this past weekend had to run a segment about whether or not Donald Trump is still all there. And Donald Trump's last remaining Republican opponent, Nikki Haley, decided to take full advantage of Donald Trump's continued and very obvious mental decline by pointing it out in an interview on CBS News Tuesday morning when Nikki Haley said this. Are we really in this country going to have two 80-year-olds running for president? It is a fact that when you are their age, you have mental decline. I don't care who you are, you have mental decline. He didn't just get me confused. He mentioned it over and over and over again. He's not what he was in 2016. He has declined. That's a fact, Nikki Haley said on CBS News. And it is a fact. It's very obvious to everyone that has been paying attention. You know, I mean, I've had to talk about him pretty much every day since he burst onto the campaign trail in 2015. So yeah, I mean, I've watched his speeches, I've seen his rallies, I've watched his interviews, unfortunately. He definitely is not what he was. If it's due to some kind of actual mental deterioration, like a medical condition, or if it's just the stress of all the trials finally eating away at him, I don't know. I'm not trained, and of course haven't done brain scans on Donald Trump to see what's actually kicking around up there, but it's obvious that something, somehow, some way, has caused him to slip. Now, I do have to take issue with what Nikki Haley did say here, because she says when you get to that age, automatically you've got mental decline across the board, no matter what, no matter who you are. That's actually not necessarily true. Okay? That is a very broad, general statement that she's saying applies to every single human being on the planet. And no, you can actually not make a broad statement like that and call it a fact. There are plenty of people in their late 70s or 80s who are just as sharp today as they were in their 20s, okay? So let's be real about that. Age alone is not necessarily a precursor for somebody not being as cognitively talented as they used to be. Sure, it happens to most people, absolutely. And that is because, partially, not just, you know, age and things slow down, you've acquired, you know, 75, 80 years of knowledge and experience. So sometimes it takes people a little bit longer to remember certain things because they have a lot more paperwork, we'll call it, to sort through in their brains. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they're slipping or they don't know things like they used to. It just may take a little bit longer to access it. But Trump's decline, this is not just a simple issue of, oh, well, he screwed up here. It's, you know, no, he can't remember people's names. He can't remember who he's running against. He can't remember who he ran against in 2016. He doesn't know very basic things that he should. That goes beyond just a little bit of confusion. Because as Haley said, he's done it over and over and over again. Like when he repeatedly said Nikki Haley's name, when he said she was in charge on January 6th, he said her name like 5 times in that whole diatribe. That's a big mistake. And it's a repeated mistake. Something's not right. But Nikki Haley might be a little late to the party. You know, how can she overcome what's happened in the first 2 contests by just now harping on Donald Trump's mental failings? She should have done this a long time ago. She could have, but she chose to play nice for far too long, and now she's trying to play catch up. But again, the only good thing about this is that the media is paying attention. They are starting to do stories on Donald Trump's cognitive decline. So maybe that means they're not going to give him a free pass again like they did in 2016 and in 2020. Here's hoping, right? Republicans in the House of Representatives have benefited recently from the fact that there's a lot of things going on right now. You know, the E. Jean Carroll trial and verdict, the New York fraud trial with Donald Trump, the primary, the caucus, you know, the impeachment of Mayorkas that has largely kind of flown under the radar. It's a big deal because the guy's not broken any laws. But Republicans are enjoying all of these distractions that are happening because they're making the public not pay attention to the fact that the Joe Biden impeachment, and by extension, the Hunter Biden investigation in the House, has basically completely fallen apart. See, recently, the House Oversight Committee had to release more transcripts of interviews with witnesses that they've conducted behind closed doors. And they recently released one a couple days ago from a man by the name of Rob Walker. Now, Mr. Walker was, in fact, a business associate of Hunter Biden. And during his closed-door testimony, because God forbid the public actually get to see what's happening, but during his closed-door testimony, Mr. Walker said this about President Biden's involvement with Hunter Biden's business deals. To be clear, President Biden, while in office or as a private citizen, was never involved in any of the business activities we pursued. Any statement to the contrary, Mr. Walker said, is simply false. Hunter made sure there was always a clear boundary between any business and his father. Based on what has transpired through this inquiry to date, I'm very concerned that what I say here today may be taken out of context to further a political objective, rather than discover the truth, Mr. Walker added. So once again, as has happened every single time Republicans have pulled in a witness to testify, they said President Biden was not ever involved in any of this. And to say otherwise is an absolute lie to the American public and, of course, to yourselves. So their whole let's get Biden for his son's business deals has fallen apart. It's fallen apart since day one. The very first time they had these alleged whistleblowers come in, only for us to find out a short time later that these people aren't actually whistleblowers. They were removed from their jobs for not doing their jobs. But even they couldn't tie President Biden into any criminal activity. Hell, so far, they haven't even tied Hunter Biden into any criminal activity other than the not paying the taxes thing and the gun. But none of this has yielded anything for the Republican Party to actually champion and highlight. They've attempted to, but hell, we're at the point where even Fox News has called these idiots out for not having anything. You got Republicans in the Senate speaking out this week saying that impeaching President Biden and, of course, impeaching Mayorkas is the dumbest thing ever. There's no evidence of any criminal activity. What are y'all doing? You're torpedoing our party, they say, during an election year for what? This isn't going to help us. It's going to hurt us. So, because of that, I always say, let them do it. Let them continue. These idiots see that there is a cliff up ahead, and rather than slamming on the brakes of the crazy train, they're going full steam ahead. Let's go off that cliff. Maybe we'll have a soft landing. That never works. But let's just let these idiots do it, because they're the ones who are going to pay the consequences for it. According to the court-appointed financial monitor that has been looking over the Trump Organization's financial documents and monitoring all of the transactions that they're making and even some transactions and reports from the past, but according to that monitor, it kind of looks like Donald Trump may have lied about a loan that he gave to one of his own companies in order to not pay taxes on roughly $48 million in income. Now, this is a bit of a complicated story because it involves LLCs, an LLC that Donald Trump owns, you know, financial statements, all things that, you know, people typically get degrees in to be able to understand. So I'm going to try to explain this as basically as possible. And I'm going to do that by reading this right here. This is from The Independent, quoting the monitor, who, by the way, is a former judge, Barbara Jones. Here's what she said. When I inquired about this loan, the $48 million, I was informed that there are no loan agreements that memorialize the loan, but that it was a loan that was believed to be between Donald J. Trump individually and Chicago Unit Acquisition, which is an LLC that Trump owns. However, in recent discussions with the Trump Organization, it indicated that it has determined that this loan never existed, and thus it would be removed from any upcoming forms. Okay, so the Trump Organization tells her, like, oh yeah, actually, that's not a thing that ever happened, so we're not going to put it on any forms. Sorry about that, they said. Okay, well, then you had Alan Garten, who is the chief legal counsel for the Trump Organization, who says, yes, the loan existed. That's one of many inaccuracies contained in the monitor's letter, which we will be addressing with court. Okay, so the Trump Organization says that the loan actually did not exist, but then the Trump Organization says, no, the loan totally exists. Now, if that is confusing to you, don't worry. It's very confusing and also very stupid. Some people in the company say, nope, Trump never loaned his own company that money. And then other people in the company say, hell yeah, he loaned the company that money. So, if you want to bring that up into the court, please do, because I would love to see the Trump Organization versus the Trump Organization about whether or not this loan existed. But there's more, again, from The Independent. Here's what they write. And this helps explain it a little bit better. In 2018, Mother Jones reported Mr. Trump may have fabricated the loan to make it appear that his LLC owed debt that had already been forgiven, because Trump had a $100 million loan and the bank forgave part of it following the financial collapse after 2008. It appeared that the LLC owed debt that had already been forgiven, allowing him to evade taxes on $48 million of canceled debt. The letter from the court-appointed monitor in the fraud case 6 years later could bolster that central claim that the loan never existed. Such a deal appears to have been arranged in the aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis, while Mr. Trump was loaded down with tens of millions of dollars in debt from his Chicago project. Mr. Trump appeared to have one of the principal entities funding the project, a firm called Fortress, agree to cancel half his original $100 million loan. That deal would qualify as $48 million in reportable taxable income. Mr. Trump made it appear that he bought the loans back instead. Through this arrangement, Mr. Trump appears to have instead pocketed the $48 million in canceled debts and constructed a loan as cover. Now, if this happened, that would in fact be criminal. And as we know, Donald Trump is currently not facing criminal charges on any of this. This is just a civil case. But Chicago, if you're listening, maybe you ought to look at those financial documents, because this at the very least warrants some kind of investigation, right? I mean, we don't have to go ahead and file charges, but I would think that somebody somewhere in a Chicago law enforcement unit would want to take a look at this, because it sure as hell seems a little iffy, especially considering the fact that half the Trump organization says the loan didn't exist, but the other half says, oh yes, it's totally real. Kinda, you know, conflicting stories from the actual organization. Maybe it's time somebody somewhere looked into this. And that's all the time we have for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want the full show every week, sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com.